This is prompted. Tech Talks. More information, not more opinions. Hard data, real-world examples, and expert perspectives on the technology topics that matter. 100 years ago, a 23-year-old physicist on a windswept island worked out the strangest theory in science. Today, that theory runs your phone, your GPS, your hospital's imaging equipment, and a multi-billion dollar race to build an entirely new kind of computer. This is Quantum Mechanics at 100. Segment 1. Topic Brief. In June 2025, about 300 physicists boarded ferries to a small, nearly treeless island in the North Sea called Helgoland. They were not there for the scenery. They were there for an anniversary. 100 years earlier, in the summer of 1925, a young German physicist named Werner Heisenberg had retreated to that island to escape a brutal allergy season. And while he was there, he worked out the first complete mathematical formulation of quantum mechanics. The United Nations declared 2025 the International Year of Quantum Science and Technology to mark that centenary, and the Helgoland Conference, 31 lectures, 5 panel debates, over 100 posters, was its centerpiece. So why does a 100-year-old theory deserve your attention today? Because the money and the claims around it have never been louder. According to McKinsey's Quantum Technology Monitor, published in April 2026, quantum technology companies generated more than $1 billion in revenue worldwide in 2025, and investors put $12.6 billion into the sector that same year, more than 6 times the prior year's total by McKinsey's count. And the claims have escalated along with the money. In the past 18 months alone, Google announced what it calls the first verifiable quantum advantage. IBM published a dated engineering roadmap to a fault-tolerant quantum computer by 2029. Microsoft unveiled a chip built on an exotic state of matter. And prominent physicists publicly questioned whether the company has demonstrated what it says it has. The CEO of NVIDIA moved markets with a single sentence about quantum timelines and then walked it back on stage. And in October 2025, the Nobel Prize in Physics went to 3 researchers whose 40-year-old experiments quietly made this entire industry possible. This episode is the full arc, where quantum mechanics came from. The quantum technology that's already in your pocket, because there's more of it than most people realize. How the science actually works. Superposition, entanglement, tunneling, and the fragility that makes quantum computers so hard to build. Who is claiming what in the race to build them, and the open questions that a century of progress still hasn't answered. One thing worth saying up front, quantum mechanics itself is not in dispute. It is, by measurable standards, among the most successful and precisely tested theories in the history of science. What's contested, sharply, publicly, and expensively, is what happens next. That contest is the story.
Segment 2. The Landscape. Start on the island. In June 1925, Werner Heisenberg was 23 years old, suffering from hay fever so severe he could barely work, and stuck on a problem that had been embarrassing physics for a quarter century. Atoms simply refused to behave the way classical physics said they should. The trouble had started in 1900, when the German physicist Max Planck was trying to fix a broken equation describing the glow of hot objects. The math only worked if he assumed energy came in discrete packets, quanta, rather than flowing continuously. Planck himself treated it as a mathematical trick, an act of desperation. Then in 1905, a young patent clerk named Albert Einstein took the trick seriously. Light itself, he argued, comes in particles, and that idea, not relativity, is what won Einstein his Nobel Prize. In 1913, Niels Bohr applied quantization to the atom itself, proposing that electrons could only occupy certain allowed orbits, which explained why atoms absorbed and emitted light at sharp, specific frequencies. It worked, and nobody knew why. For 2 decades, physics ran on this patchwork. Classical rules, with quantum exceptions bolted on wherever the classical rules failed. What was missing was a theory. On Helgoland, Heisenberg made a radical move. He stopped trying to describe what an electron was doing inside an atom, its path, its orbit, the things nobody could actually see, and built a mathematics out of only what could be observed, the light atoms absorbed and emitted. The result, published later that year, became known as matrix mechanics. It was the first version of quantum theory that actually worked as a complete system. Within roughly 2 years, Heisenberg's framework, Erwin Schrödinger's wave equation, and the work of physicists like Max Born and Paul Dirac had fused into the quantum mechanics still taught and still used today. In 1927, Heisenberg added the principle his name is now attached to, uncertainty, the discovery that nature itself sets a hard limit on how precisely certain pairs of properties, like a particle's position and momentum, can be known at the same time. Not a limit of our instruments, a limit of reality. The new theory split physics' greatest minds. At the famous Solvay Conference of 1927, Einstein, who had helped start the quantum revolution, spent the week constructing thought experiments designed to break it, and Bohr spent the evenings dismantling them. Einstein never accepted that the universe ran on probability at its base and argued the point for the rest of his life. He lost every round on the physics. The debate he started, about what the theory means, is still open, and we'll come back to it at the end. Here is the part of the story that often gets skipped. Quantum mechanics did not spend the last century as an academic curiosity. It became the operating manual for modern technology. In 1947 at Bell Labs, researchers who understood how electrons behave in semiconductor materials, which is quantum behavior, invented the transistor, the switch inside every chip in every device you own. In 1960, the first working laser turned the quantized energy levels Heisenberg's generation mapped into a tool that now reads barcodes, carries the internet through fiber optics, and performs eye surgery. The MRI machine in your hospital reads the quantum spin of atomic nuclei in your body. The GPS in your phone only works because atomic clocks, clocks that tick according to quantum transitions in atoms, keep satellite time precisely enough to triangulate your position. Physicists sometimes call this the first quantum revolution, a century of technology built on understanding quantum rules in bulk, billions of electrons or atoms at a time. The second quantum revolution, the one driving today's headlines, is different in kind. It's about controlling individual quantum states, one by one, and using their strangest properties directly. The idea has a famous starting point. In the early 1980s, the physicist Richard Feynman argued that simulating nature, molecules, materials, chemistry, would never be efficient on classical computers because nature isn't classical. If you want to simulate quantum systems, he proposed, build a computer that is itself quantum. 4 decades later, that proposal has become an industry. When the Nobel Committee announced the 2025 Physics Prize, its chair, Ole Eriksson, put it plainly, it is wonderful to be able to celebrate the way that century-old quantum mechanics continually offers new surprises. It is also enormously useful, as quantum mechanics is the foundation of all digital technology. That 2025 prize is the bridge between the history and the present. In 1984 and 1985, three physicists at the University of California, Berkeley, John Clark, Michel Devoret, and John Martinez, built an electrical circuit out of superconductors separated by a whisper-thin insulating barrier, a device called a Josephson junction. Quantum effects were supposed to live at the scale of single atoms and particles. Their circuit was big enough to hold in your hand, and yet it behaved quantum mechanically. It tunneled between states as if passing through a wall, and it absorbed energy only in discrete doses. Quantum weirdness in an object you could manufacture. 40 years later, in October 2025, that work won the Nobel Prize in Physics. The official citation reads, "For the discovery of macroscopic quantum mechanical tunneling and energy quantization in an electric circuit." Clark, by then an emeritus professor at Berkeley, told the Nobel Committee, "To put it mildly, it was the surprise of my life." Why does a 1985 circuit matter in 2026? Because that circuit is the direct ancestor of the superconducting qubits inside Google's and IBM's quantum processors. The Nobel work didn't just confirm a theory, it demonstrated that quantum states could be engineered, controlled, and scaled in manufactured hardware. And the laureates themselves walked that path into industry. Devoret's affiliations today include Google Quantum AI and Martinez, who previously led Google's quantum hardware effort, co-founded a quantum startup. The line from Nobel Physics to corporate roadmap runs through the same people. The modern era has a name, and it was coined in 2018 by Caltech physicist John Preskill, NISQ, for noisy intermediate-scale quantum. In the paper that defined it, Preskill wrote, "Noisy intermediate-scale quantum, NISQ, technology will be available in the near future." And he was precise about both the promise and the catch. Quantum computers with 50 to 100 qubits may be able to perform tasks which surpass the capabilities of today's classical digital computers, but noise in quantum gates will limit the size of quantum circuits that can be executed reliably. That single sentence is still the most useful frame for everything you'll hear in this episode. The machines exist. The noise is the war. So where does the field stand commercially? McKinsey's April 2026 Quantum Technology Monitor, the firm's annual sector report, counts more than $1 billion in 2025 revenue across quantum companies, $12.6 billion in 2025 investment, and projects revenue reaching $4.4 billion by 2028. Looking further out, the same report projects a $60 to $100 billion quantum technology market by 2035. Treat those longer numbers as what they are, forecasts built on assumptions about technical milestones that have not happened yet. And note what quantum technology actually covers, because it's three businesses, not one. Quantum computing, the headline act. Quantum communication and cryptography, securing information against quantum attacks. And quantum sensing, using quantum fragility to measure the world with extreme precision, a business that is already shipping products. Keep all three in mind. We'll meet each of them under the hood.
Segment 3, Under the Hood. Strip away the headlines and quantum technology rests on a handful of concepts. None of them require math to understand. All of them require letting go of everyday intuition. Start with the bit. Every classical computer, your laptop, your phone, the largest supercomputer on Earth, stores and processes information as bits, and a bit is always exactly one of two things, zero or one. A quantum bit, a qubit, is different. Until you measure it, a qubit exists in what physicists call a superposition, a precisely defined blend of zero and one at the same time. The popular shorthand says a qubit is both zero and one at once, and that's close enough to start, but the more accurate picture is subtler. A qubit carries a kind of weighted possibility for each outcome, and this is the crucial part. Those weights can cancel each other out or reinforce each other, like overlapping waves. That's called interference. Interference is the actual engine of quantum computing. A quantum algorithm doesn't try every answer at once and pick the best one. That's the most common misconception in the field. Instead, it choreographs the interference so that the paths leading to wrong answers cancel out and the paths leading to right answers reinforce. When you finally measure the system, the right answer is what's overwhelmingly likely to remain. Design that choreography well, and certain problems collapse from impossibly long to manageable. And the resource grows explosively. Each qubit you add doesn't add capacity, it multiplies it. Two qubits hold a blend of four states. 10 qubits, about 1,000. 300 qubits can represent more states than there are atoms in the observable universe. That's the theoretical pull that has drawn tens of billions of dollars into this field, for specific kinds of problems that exponential space is a shortcut classical machines can't take. But, and this matters, only for specific kinds of problems. A quantum computer is not a faster computer. It will not load your spreadsheet sooner or render your video faster. For almost everything computers do today, classical machines are and will remain the right tool. The famous quantum algorithms attack particular structures. Peter Shor's 1994 algorithm factors enormous numbers exponentially faster than any known classical method, which is exactly why it threatens encryption, and we'll return to that. Love Grover's 1996 algorithm searches unstructured possibilities faster than classical brute force. And the application Feynman originally imagined, simulating molecules and materials at their native quantum level for drug discovery, battery chemistry, fertilizer catalysts, remains the one most experts consider the technology's deepest promise. The pattern to remember, quantum computing is a specialist's tool with a short list of known superpowers, and part of today's research race is simply making that list longer. If superposition sounds absurd to you, you're in good company. Schrödinger thought so too. His famous cat, sealed in a box with a quantum trigger, supposedly both alive and dead until observed, was not proposed as a cool illustration. It was proposed as a complaint, a deliberately ridiculous scenario meant to show the theory had to be missing something. 90 years later, the cat survives as the field's favorite teaching tool, and the complaint survives as an open question. Experiments keep pushing superposition to larger and larger scales. Remember, the 2025 Nobel went to putting an entire circuit into superposition. And no one has yet found the boundary where the quantum world ends and the everyday world begins, or whether there is one. Second concept, entanglement. Take two qubits and link them so they form a single quantum state. Measure one, and the result of measuring the other is instantly correlated in ways that no classical theory of prearranged answers can reproduce. Einstein famously distrusted this. 5 decades of increasingly airtight experiments have confirmed it's real. For our purposes, entanglement is the connective tissue of a quantum computer. It's what lets 100 qubits act as one coordinated machine instead of 100 soloists. And it's the basis of quantum communication networks designed so that eavesdropping is physically detectable. Third, tunneling, the star of the 2025 Nobel. In the quantum world, a particle confronting an energy barrier it shouldn't be able to cross will sometimes simply appear on the other side. Not by going over, by tunneling through. That sounds like a parlor trick until you remember what Clark, Deveret, and Martinis showed in 1985. An entire electrical circuit, billions of electrons moving as one, tunneling between states like a single particle. The Josephson junctions at the heart of that experiment are today the building blocks of superconducting qubits, the technology Google and IBM bet on. It's worth pausing on how many different ways engineers are trying to build the same abstract thing, because the diversity tells you something about where the field is. Superconducting qubits are electrical circuits, fast to operate, manufactured with chip fabrication techniques, but demanding extreme cold. Trapped ion machines hold individual charged atoms in electromagnetic fields and manipulate them with lasers. Nature provides perfectly identical qubits, prized for stability, at the cost of slower operations. Neutral atom systems hold uncharged atoms in grids of laser light, optical tweezers, and have scaled to impressive array sizes. Photonic approaches encode information in particles of light, which can travel at room temperature down a fiber, and Microsoft is pursuing qubits built on exotic states of matter, a story we'll take up properly in the next segment. Every one of these implements the same concepts. Superposition, entanglement, interference. They disagree, sometimes violently, on engineering. When a field hasn't converged on its basic hardware, that's usually a sign you're early. Nobody was arguing about vacuum tubes versus transistors by 1975. Now the hard part, the reason you can't buy a quantum laptop, it's called decoherence. Superposition and entanglement are extraordinarily fragile, a stray vibration, a flicker of heat, a wandering magnetic field. Almost any interaction with the environment collapses a qubit's quantum state, and the information is gone. This is why quantum processors live at the bottom of dilution refrigerators colder than deep space, and it's why raw qubit counts are mostly a vanity metric. 1,000 noisy qubits that decohere mid-calculation are worth less than 50 clean ones. The field's answer is quantum error correction, and the core idea is one you already use. When a phone connection is bad, you repeat yourself. Redundancy beats noise. Classical computers do the same thing with extra check bits. The quantum version is far harder because of a rule with no classical equivalent. You cannot simply copy a qubit, and you cannot look at one to check it without destroying the very state you're protecting. So quantum error correction does something cleverer. It spreads one qubit's worth of protected information, a logical qubit, across many physical qubits, then continuously measures the relationships between them, never the information itself. Errors show up as disturbances in those relationships and can be fixed without ever opening the box. The catch is brutal overhead. Depending on the scheme, one good logical qubit can cost hundreds or thousands of physical ones. And for decades, there was a deeper worry, a threshold question. If your physical qubits are too noisy, adding more of them for error correction adds more noise than it removes, and the whole scheme runs backwards. That's why a December 2024 result mattered so much. In a paper published in Nature, Google's quantum team demonstrated error correction on its 105-qubit Willow chip that was, for the first time convincingly, below threshold. Meaning that as they made the error-correcting code bigger, going from a 3x3 grid of qubits to 5x5 to 7x7, the logical error rate didn't grow. It dropped, roughly in half with each step up. That's the regime where scaling helps instead of hurts. And every roadmap promise you'll hear in the next segment quietly depends on it. Before we get to the race, two quantum technologies that are not waiting for any breakthrough, because they're already deployed. The first is sensing, and it inverts the fragility problem. The same exquisite sensitivity that makes qubits terrible at holding data makes them superb at measuring things. Atomic clocks, quantum devices, have anchored GPS for decades. Superconducting quantum sensors called SQUIDs read the faint magnetic fields of the human body and brain in medical imaging. Quantum gravimeters map what's underground, water, minerals, voids, by sensing tiny variations in gravity. And the sector is consolidating into the mainstream tech economy. In October 2025, quantum computing company IonQ acquired Vector Atomic, a maker of precision atomic clocks and inertial sensors, whose technology, the company reports, can improve GPS class accuracy by a factor of 1,000. Instruments aimed at navigation when GPS is jammed or unavailable. Quantum sensing is the quiet proof that quantum technology is not a future tense phrase. The second is cryptography, and it's where quantum computing touches your life before a single useful quantum computer exists. Since 1994, it's been known that a sufficiently powerful quantum computer running an algorithm devised by mathematician Peter Shor could factor the enormous numbers underpinning most of today's public key encryption, the encryption securing your banking, your messages, and a few decades of governmental and corporate secrets. No machine on Earth can do this today. But data doesn't expire on a schedule, and security agencies plan around a strategy called Harvest Now, Decrypt Later. Adversaries collecting encrypted traffic today to unlock if and when the hardware arrives. That's why in August 2024, the U.S. National Institute of Standards and Technology finalized its first three post-quantum encryption standards. Algorithms based on math problems believed hard even for quantum computers, capping an 8-year international selection process. The migration of the world's infrastructure onto those standards has begun, and it will take years. Whatever you believe about quantum timelines, that migration is a present tense, real-world consequence.
Segment 4, The Arena. Now the race, and the arguments. Three companies illustrate three genuinely different philosophies, and around them, a fight about timelines that spilled into the stock market. None of what follows is settled. That's the point. Start with Google, whose strategy has been to demonstrate milestones and whose history explains why the wording of those milestones keeps changing. In 2019, Google claimed quantum supremacy on a sampling task, and rivals, IBM most prominently, publicly contested it, arguing the task could be done classically far faster than Google had estimated. In the years since, classical algorithm designers have repeatedly closed gaps that quantum demonstrations claimed, a pattern the field knows well. Every advantage claim starts a race with the classical computing community, and the classical side keeps winning rounds. That history is the backdrop for everything Google has announced since. When it announced Willow in December 2024, Google quantum AI founder Hartmut Nevin wrote that the chip performed a computation in under 5 minutes that would take one of today's fastest supercomputers 10 septillion years. That's a deliberately staggering number, and it deserves its context. The task was random circuit sampling, a benchmark designed to favor quantum hardware, a demonstration of raw capability, not a commercial workload. The deeper result in that announcement was the below-threshold error correction we covered earlier, published in Nature. Then, in October 2025, Google made a claim engineered to answer the 2019 criticism. The first verifiable quantum advantage. Running an algorithm it calls quantum echoes on the same Willow chip Google reported computing a physical quantity, a measure of how information scrambles in a quantum system, 13,000 times faster than the best-known classical algorithm on one of the world's fastest supercomputers. The word verifiable is the headline. Unlike the 2019-era demonstrations, the output is a repeatable number that another quantum machine of similar caliber could independently check. In a proof of principle with UC Berkeley, the team applied it to real molecules, one with 15 atoms, one with 28, and matched results from nuclear magnetic resonance while extracting information NMR doesn't usually provide. Supporters read this as the first step from benchmark theater towards scientific utility. The cautious reading, it's one algorithm on one class of physics problems, and faster than the best-known classical algorithm, is a claim classical algorithm designers have repeatedly eroded before. IBM has made the opposite bet, fewer fireworks, more Gantt chart. In June 2025, the company announced it would build what it calls IBM Quantum Starling, a large-scale fault-tolerant quantum computer at a new data center in Poughkeepsie, New York, by 2029. The stated specs, 200 logical qubits running 100 million quantum operations. IBM's engineering argument centers on a different error-correcting scheme, QLDPC codes, which the company says cuts the physical qubit overhead of error correction by up to 90% compared to the surface code approach, with named intermediate machines on dated milestones along the way, and a 2,000 logical qubit system sketched for 2033 and beyond. Announcing it, IBM Chairman and CEO Arvind Krishna said, "IBM is charting the next frontier in quantum computing. Our expertise across mathematics, physics, and engineering is paving the way for a large-scale, fault-tolerant quantum computer, one that will solve real-world challenges and unlock immense possibilities for business." A roadmap with dates is falsifiable, and that's to IBM's credit. It is also, for now, a roadmap, a plan, not a result. Beat, a note before the third company, because the race is wider than big tech. Trapped ion specialists like IonQ and Quantinuum, neutral atom startups, photonics companies, national laboratories, and university groups all hold serious positions on the board. The billion-dollar IonQ Oxford Ionics deal in 2025 was a startup acquiring a startup. The big three framing in this segment is about three contrasting philosophies, not a complete map of the contenders. Then there's Microsoft, which is running the field's most scientifically contested experiment in public. Microsoft's bet is the topological qubit, encode quantum information in exotic states of matter, Majorana modes, whose properties are protected by the topology of the system itself, the way a knot stays knotted, however you shake the rope. If it works, error resistance gets built into the hardware, and the brutal overhead of error correction shrinks dramatically. It is the highest risk, highest reward wager on the board, and the field has been burned before. In 2021, a high-profile Majorana paper involving Microsoft-affiliated researcher was retracted after outside experts found the data could be explained by material imperfections. In February 2025, Microsoft announced Majorana 1, presenting it as the first chip powered by topological qubits. Computer scientist Scott Aronson of UT Austin captured the stakes. If the claim stands, it would be a scientific milestone for the field of topological quantum computing and physics beyond. Adding, "As a scientist who likes to see things tried, I'm grateful that at least one player stuck with the topological approach even when it ended up being a long, painful slog." But physicist Winfried Hensinger of the University of Sussex pointed at a gap between the science and the marketing. The peer-reviewed publication is quite clear that it contains no proof for topological qubits, but the press release speaks differently. In academia, that's a big no-no. You shouldn't make claims that are not supported by a peer-reviewed publication. Materials scientist Ivar Martin of Argonne National Laboratory took a middle line, calling the device a remarkable achievement from the materials science and fabrication standpoint, while cautioning that significant work remains even in the best case. The story is still live. In June 2026, days ago, as this episode is generated, Microsoft presented an upgraded chip, Majorana 2, reporting that swapping aluminum for lead as the superconductor pushed a key qubit stability metric from milliseconds to roughly 20 seconds. Microsoft physicist Chetan Nayak. We're seeing this more than 1,000x improvement in this critical metric of the qubit based on this change. Physicist Kartik Agarwal of Argonne called it fantastic progress. And physicist Henry Legge of the University of St. Andrews, one of the approach's most persistent critics, was unmoved. Nothing in this preprint resolves the fundamental issues, he said, and nothing in the presented data proves the existence of a topological qubit or Majoranas in these devices. Critics note the paper, not yet peer-reviewed, shows only one of the two complementary measurement types a functioning qubit requires. Both sides are looking at the same data. They do not agree on what it shows. Which brings us to the fight about time itself. In January 2025, NVIDIA CEO Jensen Huang, whose chips power the AI boom and whose company sells the classical hardware that simulates and controls quantum systems, remarked that genuinely useful quantum computers were likely 15 to 30 years away. Publicly traded quantum stocks lost roughly $4 billion in market value in the aftermath. 2 months later, at NVIDIA's own GTC conference, Huang hosted a quantum day, opened it by joking, "This is the first event in history where a company CEO invites all of the guests to explain why he was wrong," and conceded the point while keeping his core caution. Of course, quantum computing has the potential and all of our hopes that it will deliver extraordinary impact. But the technology is insanely complicated. Hold that episode next to the money. McKinsey titled its April 2026 report, "A Commercial Tipping Point, $12.6 billion invested in a single year," by its count. The consolidation is real money too. IonQ's 2025 acquisition of Oxford Ionics was valued at $1.1 billion. And per the same report, a third of the large companies McKinsey analyzed now spend over $10 million a year on quantum efforts, with the largest single corporate budget at $200 million. Against all of that, total industry revenue of about $1 billion, much of it from governments, research institutions, and companies buying access to experiment. And even McKinsey's own figures invite scrutiny, with analysts noting the difficulty of cleanly classifying investments, particularly state-backed programs whose totals can't be independently verified. One reading says, "This is what pre-inflection technology investment always looks like, capital arriving ahead of revenue, exactly as it did for AI." Another reading says the gap between investment and revenue is the bubble, visible in plain sight. And Preskill's NISQ framing from 2018 still sits underneath both readings. Noisy machines, real but narrow capabilities, and a long engineering road whose length nobody, not Huang, not the labs, not the analysts, can currently measure. The market moved $4 billion on one man's guess. That tells you how little anyone actually knows.
Segment 5. Open questions. A century of quantum mechanics and the honest accounting ends with questions. Here is what nobody can answer yet. First, when does advantage become utility? Google's Quantum Echo's result is, by its own description, verifiable, but it computes a physicist's quantity on a physicist's problem. No one has yet shown a quantum computer beating classical machines end-to-end on a problem a business would pay to solve. Drug design, materials discovery, logistics. With a result that mattered commercially. Every previous computing revolution had its unmistakable moment when the technology crossed from demonstration into necessity. What does that moment look like for quantum, and would we even recognize it from inside the hype cycle? Second, which qubit wins? Superconducting circuits, trapped ions, neutral atoms, photonics, topological matter. The field is running at least 5 serious hardware bets in parallel, and they cannot all be the future. The history of computing suggests consolidation around one dominant architecture. Nothing in the current data says which, or whether the answer is different architectures for different jobs, the way GPUs and CPUs coexist today. Third, does error correction survive contact with scale? Below threshold on one logical qubit, on one chip, in one lab, is not 200 logical qubits running 100 million coordinated operations. Between Willow and Starling lies engineering territory no one has crossed. Manufacturing yield, control wiring, decoders keeping pace in real time, refrigeration at scale. The threshold result says the road exists. It says nothing about whether it can be paved on anyone's announced schedule. Fourth, is the money early, or wrong? $12.6 billion of 2025 investment against $1 billion of revenue is either conviction or contagion. And the same chart supports both stories. The uncomfortable truth is that the answer depends entirely on technical timelines that the people writing the checks cannot independently verify, as the $4 billion reaction to a single CEO's offhand estimate demonstrated. Fifth, who is actually ahead? Quantum is also a contest between nations, and it's a contest played with hidden cards. Government programs, American, Chinese, European, fund a meaningful share of the field, and analysts openly acknowledge that state-backed investment totals, especially China's, can't be independently verified. Unlike a product market where shipping hardware settles arguments, a strategic technology race can be led quietly. The public scoreboard may not be the real one, and there's no way from outside to know by how much. Sixth, the security clock has no hands. The world is migrating its encryption to post-quantum standards on the assumption that a cryptographically relevant quantum computer might arrive within the lifespan of today's secrets. If the hardware comes faster than the migration finishes, data harvested today gets opened retroactively. If it comes decades late, or never, the migration becomes an enormous insurance premium paid against a fire that didn't start. Either way, billions in infrastructure spending now rides on a timeline estimate nobody can defend with data. And the last question is the oldest one. 100 years after Helgoland, quantum mechanics has never failed an experimental test, and physicists still do not agree on what its central act, the measurement, actually is. Einstein's argument with Bohr never really ended, it just changed venues. The theory works flawlessly, the meaning remains unsettled. The first century of quantum mechanics turned a young man's island arithmetic into transistors, lasers, GPS, Nobel Prizes, and a $1 trillion question. So as the second century opens, consider, if a theory can power the world for 100 years while its deepest question stays open, what else don't we know that we're already using? Outro. Today we covered a century in about 40 minutes. Quantum mechanics began in 1925 as one allergic physicist's island mathematics, spent decades quietly becoming the foundation of transistors, lasers, GPS, and medical imaging, and has now entered its most contested chapter, a multi-billion-dollar race to control quantum states qubit by qubit, with Google, IBM, and Microsoft betting on different physics and physicists openly disputing what's been proven. Three takeaways. One, quantum technology is not future tense. Atomic clocks, quantum sensors, and post-quantum encryption standards are deployed reality today, whatever happens to quantum computers. Two, watch error correction, not qubit counts. Below threshold scaling is the gate every roadmap quietly depends on. Three, the disagreements are the data. When Nobel-caliber physicists dispute a chip's claims and a CEO retracts a timeline on stage, that tells you exactly where this field actually stands. Powerful, promising, and unproven. Thanks for listening to Prompted Tech Talks.